From the Sydney Morning Herald, Adam Pengilly, who's had a very long morning. He was up watching the Socceroos from the early hours. Adam, morning to you. Tell us about just how tense that was.
Yeah, morning, Jared. Morning, Loz. That was not a very easy watch, I must say, but what a result. Just unbelievable, isn't it? Like, I'm full-time, I was almost emotional, to be honest, that the Socceroos had qualified for the round of 16 of the World Cup. You guys will obviously hear some feedback about the game and speak to people about it later this morning, but the first 20, 25 minutes, the Socceroos were clearly very nervous and second best to Denmark. And it looks like it was going to be a matter of time before the Danes would find a breakthrough. But they slowly grew into the game. And their second half performance was great. And when Tunisia scored to go ahead of France, we just thought, you're kidding me. You know, like, we can't get a draw against Denmark and be knocked out because France have lost to Tunisia. But thankfully, Matt Leckie popped up and scored a goal that I suppose a lot of Socceroos fans have been craving for him for a very long time. He's been a stalwart of the Socceroos team for the best part of 8 or 9 years now. I think he's his third World Cup, but if there's been one knock on him, it's just his quality in the final third, whether it's the final pass or the shot or the finish. And he delivered on the biggest stage today and just cued ecstasy and pandemonium. What a morning. What a morning for Australian sport.
Well, they talk about the golden generation and that 2006 team and how good a performance they had at a World Cup. Surely this betters that. I mean, we've had two victories in the group stage. We now move on to the group 16. We nearly failed to qualify. There have been plenty of critics of Graham Arnold, yet they've been able to come out and go through to the remaining 16 teams. And you know, I just think it's a phenomenal performance.
Yeah, Loz, Graham Arnold, what a fascinating story. Like, he was literally one Andrew Redmayne save in that penalty shootout away from being the most lambasted probably person in Australian sport, to be fair, because there were so many critics out for him saying we had a poor qualification campaign and what are you doing throwing this goalkeeper in off the bench for a penalty shootout that decides us going to the World Cup? And what he's done with this team to get them through to this point in the competition is remarkable. And you're right. I think most people would sort of agree on paper that the 2006 team was probably a better overall team than what we've got at the moment. But that team in 2006, they didn't win back-to-back games in the World Cup. They didn't keep two clean sheets in a row. They haven't beaten a top-10 team in Denmark like we've just done today, which is remarkable. I know you guys will catch up on the highlights later this morning, but Harry Suter in the middle of defence, he is an absolute colossal, Jared. Colossus. He's unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. He had another outstanding game. And quite ironically, our goal against Denmark was almost the same as Tunisia. It started their own box through Harry Suter, involved Mitch Duke in the build-up, and we scored down the other end of the field. So, yeah, quite remarkable.
Bigger things await Harry Suter. He is, I know it was already reported, he's going to be in demand after the win against Tunisia, but now his price just keeps getting elevated.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it, Jared? I think he only played one competitive game before this World Cup. Yeah. He's coming back from a knee rico, an ACL. Yeah. Like, and for him to play three games in the space of a week like he's done now and being clearly our best player, I think, in pretty much all three games, maybe by the France game, obviously, has been remarkable. So I'd be stunned if he doesn't end up in the Premier League or one of the big European leagues in the next 12 months. I think definitely bigger things are in store for him.
Now, you're in Melbourne set to cover the Australian Open Golf and being up, obviously, all hours. You weren't tempted to go into Fed Square? Have you seen the scenes?
I did see the scenes, Jared, but unfortunately, I had to get the laptop out and bash away a little story at the end of the game. So I don't think that would have been conducive just writing a story in the middle of Fed Square, but with the flares going off. But I was speaking to a few people down here yesterday at the golf, and they were talking about Fed Square for the Tunisia game, and they reckon it's just remarkable, the atmosphere down there. And I saw the flares going off again. So I don't know. Maybe I can get out there for, I think we're playing on Saturday, I think now, Saturday night or early Sunday morning in our round of 16 game. So I'll still be down here. Who knows? I might make it to Fed Square in the end.
Awesome. How good. Who are your fancies for the golf today, by the way?
Yeah, or this good weekend? Question. Yeah, good question, Jared. Obviously, Cam Smith's the player to beat without a shadow of a doubt. But probably the one little, I suppose, question mark is he hasn't played a lot on the sandbelt down here in Melbourne since his amateur days, I suppose. So there'll be a bit of a lack of familiarity with the course, I suppose, with Cam Smith. One guy who I think might be at a ridiculously big price who could do something this week is Jeff Ogilvy. Now, I know you're thinking, well, it's 2022, not 2002. What are you talking about? But he had a good finish to the Australian PGA last week in the final round and really got his game together. He looks like he's hungry, like he wants to achieve something, and he knows the sandbelt like the back of his hand. So whether he's got the miles and the legs to keep up with some of the young guns over four rounds, I don't know, but maybe backing for a top 10 or a top 5 or something like that, because he's going to have course familiarity, so he might be a specky at big odds. And on the women's side of the draw, well, it's very hard to go past Minji Lee, isn't it? She's clearly the class act. Looking forward to seeing her up against Ashley Buhai and Hannah Green and Steph Curiatri is back down here. So that's going to be a great tournament as well. And just trying to figure out how it's all going to work, the logistics, Jared, it's going to be quite fascinating over the next couple of days with players at both Kingston Heath and Victoria Golf Clubs and men and women interspersed throughout the field. So, yep, we'll see how that plays out. We're looking forward to the golf over the next few days.
And in some racing news, has Bruckner been retired?
Yeah, he has, Loz. Yeah, he has. So I know he was a nomination for a race in Sydney a couple of weeks ago. He ended up coming up to Sydney. He raced at Caulfield and was a little bit disappointing. And Kieran Maher and David Eustace have announced they've retired him. So he'll probably stand at stud, I'd imagine, at some stage next year. A horse who had a lot of abilities, a three-year-old. We know he ran second to Home Affairs down the straight in the Cormorans three-year-old season, but had a stack of issues. Couldn't quite get him back to his best as a four-year-old, only the one start, and he'll stand at stud. And hopefully they're giving him his chance. But, yeah, another one of our potential good sprinters is off the scene now.
Now, Adam, we're used to, I guess, overseas bought stayers coming to Australia to attack our Cups races and our distance races, but rarely do we see the sprinters come over. And tell us about Alcohol Free, which is headed to the Gay Waterhouse Adrian Bott Stable.
This is the changing face of Australian racing, Jared. A horse, I had to check my eyes again when I read it, bought for more than $10 million, Australian dollars, over in the UK over there recently to come down to Australia to be trained by Gay and Adrian. So Yulong obviously forked out a massive amount for us. He's a high-class European sprinter, obviously. She can get over a mile as well, but she's won Group 1s as a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old. She won the July Cup, obviously, this year. And Yulong want to bring her down to Australia to target some of the big races down here in Australia. So whether that's maybe an Everest next year, who knows? Could be a Doncaster in the autumn, could be an Epsom in the spring, even a Cox Plate. We don't know yet. But to have a horse like her come down to Australia to target our money, I think just shows the changing face of international racing. People are desperate to come down to Australia and try and cash in on the big dollars.
Northerly Stakes this weekend. Amelia's Jewel draws the inside barrier.
Yeah, all the focus on her, Loz. She's a high-class filly. As a 3-year-old, only been beaten once in her career so far. She's drawn that inside gate. Obviously taking on older horses, which is going to be a huge test for her, but she's got the featherweight. So I think Simon Miller's relatively happy with her progress. Very keen to see what she does. Everything that's been happened in her career so far suggests she's going to be a top line animal going forward. She's running good times and love to see her on the East Coast at some stage, but this is a chance to knock off a Group 1 and yep, can't wait to see how she fares.
You and many others will be running on fumes today. Thanks for your time as always, mate. Enjoy the golf.
Thanks, Louise. We'll chat tomorrow.